And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Joining me just for a few minutes is Daryl Jones from Auckland. Daryl, welcome to the program.
Hey, Vinnie, it's nice to be back, man.
Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I got you on here for just a few minutes is to give people an update, because you're trying to organise a music event called Bass in the Park in Auckland, and many who listen to the show may remember that council regulations have become somewhat, I guess the word is fascistic, and it needs to be pronounced in that tone as well, and you've just had a recent experience that kind of confirms that.
Yes, I have, and I mean, you know, it is fairly complicated, but essentially, the thing is, last time we did the event, I funded the whole event on my disability allowance, and really, I feel that the council should have backed us up, because they've got gigs doing jazz, they've got gigs doing indie, they've got gigs doing pop. We go to do a gig that is actually multi-genre, focused around, you know, bass music, you know, that includes reggae and hip-hop and drum and bass and dubstep and funk and many other things, actually, but you know, we wanted to do something that represented our culture, and it's a huge, you know, bunch of people in Auckland that are into this type of music, and what I just felt that we weren't really represented, so we went ahead, organized it, did the event, you know, by the skin of our teeth, really, you know, with no funding from the council whatsoever. To be fair, they waived a fee, but they didn't give us any support or anything. And then they wondered why it was, you know, a little bit chaotic.
And so that was the first one that you put on, but now you're receiving information that they're not even going to let you do it again.
Yeah, well, basically what they said is that it doesn't conform to the cultural... I wish I had the quote in front of me, Vinny. Basically, they said that it doesn't conform to the cultural or community values of this location, and you know, they've got some fancy long moldy type name, but I'm sure it's some little Pakeha in an office somewhere, really, you know.
I've got this impression as well. What was his name? John Ansell has been ridiculed as being racist, etc. Lately, but I don't think so. One thing he is coming up with is the propensity for Māori tribes to indeed get their hooks into local council operations.
Yes.
Under the guise of being, you know, caretakers of the land, guardians, as Māori tradition connotes. However, that's only what they sell the public on, but the reality is, just like a lot of other operations that are being conducted by trusts and things of this nature, they're doing it for profit. I'm acting under the assumption that they say, oh, you can't have this event in the park. No, it's really bad. It's against our culture. Yeah. Unless you pay us a shockingly large amount of money.
Actually, that's only partially true. See, what it seems like to me is, and you could be right here, I can't really confirm or deny that, but basically, I honestly feel like if we were to get in touch with the Māori, you know, that actually would have their support, and because, I mean, probably about 20-30% of our lineup is Māori, and you know, we know that it does conform to the cultural the culture basically, because you know, it's a community event, it's a charity event for you know, sick and injured children. It's all based with volunteers, and it's free for the public. So we think, you know, I think that you know, clearly is a community venture, you know, like. But the thing is,
one people have got to understand is there's a difference between what you think and what the reality is. You know, like, we're trying to actually help the community and raise money for them, getting a whole bunch of Māori MCs and musicians to come and play for us. And we've got kids and families and things of that nature coming around. Oh, but that's just not cultural enough, sweetheart.
part of the problem is that... that we've got so many hoops to jump through. I mean, they actually said you can't do it at Taiheke Reserve. They flatly said no, but they said you might be able to do it somewhere else. But we're going to make it you're going to have to do this, this, this. Basically, we're going to have a meeting with about 10 different governmental bodies, including the police, the people that run noise control. You've got... it was actually about 7 different sort of departments that would have to come and have a meeting, and then we'd have to jump through all these hoops and all this stuff. All we want to do is set up our sound system in the park and just have a day of music in the park, you know? It's the amount of red tape and bureaucracy is appalling.
Well, that's basically what the council's turning into, and it reminds me of a meme that I just made today. I'm basically just losing my mind with all of this nonsense, because when I see it happen, I know what it is, but it's being reported as something else, and that's driving me crazy, because I don't know if what I'm thinking is really the reality, or whether or not I'm just thinking it, and other people are completely insane and ignoring the reality, right?
Imagine how hard it's going to be once they ram through all this TPPA, TSIA, and all that crap. I mean, that's going to make it... It's going to make this seem like a walk in the park.
Quite literally. And the other thing that's been happening here is I'll actually just read this meme out. You know, frack it. All right. What's being reported in the news is based on hapless ignorance or deliberate deception. All right. Those are it. All right. And as a result, every time I see news stories about the economy, infrastructure, jobs, or trade deals, I nearly lose my mind. Why? One, the economy is controlled by banks that make money up out of thin air, buy up all the real assets with it, and leave everyone else with nothing but astronomical unpayable debt. Yeah. Infrastructure is controlled by major contracting firms who direct public spending into their own coffers through powerful roundtable groups and corrupt officials betraying the public trust. Jobs are created by entrepreneurs, not by government, who actually just make it harder or slash near impossible to create or run a business and actually prevent jobs from being created. Yeah. And a trade deal actually means handing over control of the economy and the government to powerful and corrupt companies that are in turn owned by the banks, who want to discourage entrepreneurship, lay off local workers in record numbers, and extract natural resources. Now, is this BS driving you nuts as well? Or is it just me?
I mean, I study this stuff as well, and I see what's going on, and, you know, I can't help wondering, what is the end goal? To me, it seems like a one-world corporatocracy, you know, where basically you've got a round table of dictators who control the entire globe through business, basically. And it's completely undemocratic, you know, it's run like a business.
It's global corporate fascism. Thank you.
That's it.
There's no ifs, buts, or maybes about this. There's no way of tiptoeing to the side. And if anybody actually looks at the TPPA or even assumes about the TPPA or even has some kind of an inkling as to what previous so-called free trade deals have done to the countries involved, then they would know that the TPPA is basically getting your foot in the door so that global fascism can push the door down. And that's basically it. You will be governed by corporations. They own you. They own your country. They get to determine how your life is going to be lived, and you have no say about it. Indeed, you can't even look at what powers they're giving themselves until they've already granted those powers to themselves.
I mean, the reason I think that this subject is extremely relevant to your audience is because Base in the Park is just another grassroots movement, really. And what's happening is it's getting harder and harder and harder to have any sort of grassroots movement. And when Facebook first came out, it was actually a useful tool to bring people together and actually put on events. But now it's completely nerfed, so that, you know, if you post something that they don't like, there are algorithms that stop anyone from seeing it. What we're seeing is a suppression of basically any grassroots before it can even grow. It's already concreted over. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what Bob Marley said. Kill them before they grow, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah,
he was a prophet, if you ask me.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, he had a foot infection, and he kept touring instead of like taking a little bit of time off from touring to heal himself. You know,
some of his family actually think that he might have been poisoned. But I mean, that I don't really have too much information on that. It seems like he was very mistrustful of Western doctors, for one thing.
Why wouldn't you be? As far as I know, the statistics on this, they're the leading cause of frickin' death in the Western world. Apparently, assault rifles in the United States killed like 300 some odd people last year, and doctors killed like over 114,000. And they're like, oh, the doctors are going to save me, and those assault rifles are nasty. We need to get rid of them. It's like,
actually, that figure's probably quite low. You see, the doctors are out there peddling drugs and stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty hard to measure.
Oh, yeah, but these are only the measured medical malpractice ones. These don't include all the things with known side effects like suicide, which is also a leading cause of death in America, which is the main side effect of a lot of psychotropic drugs and antidepressants. You know, it's like, man, I'm feeling really depressed. I don't want to feel depressed anymore. What should I do about it? Well, you could take this drug that'll make you kill yourself. That's a brilliant idea. Why wouldn't I?
And look, I think most doctors, you know, start off perhaps, you know, altruistic. But the thing is that, you know, they study for 6, 7 years plus, and it's a long time to be in the education system and be, you know, you can so be indoctrinated. And at the end of the day, a lot of people actually do it for money or prestige. You know, there's this whole prestige associated with being a doctor that it seems to be kind of quite unhealthy, really.
Yeah. Well, mind control's pretty straightforward. Anybody who's been in a medical institution or tried to study to be a lawyer or any number of other fields like the military, etc., there's these basic programming mind control techniques. Okay, first of all, sleep deprivation. How many people who go to medical school for 7 years get enough sleep? Zero! And the other one is silo mentality. So if you get it wrong, or if you think something different to the group punishes you and ostracizes you.
Yeah.
And what was the other one? Oh, yeah. Having central authority that you can't question, that's in control of the stuff that you do. All right. So those are the mind control techniques that are very, very basic. And these are used very heavily in, interestingly enough, the institutions that we trust to keep us safe. All right. So hold on a second here. The people that we trust to keep us safe are under a form of mind control, and the institutions that they're studying in are financed by ruthless criminal sociopaths with more money than God.
Yeah, and I mean, these sorts of things, they really are the root of the problem of so many other matters. You know, it's like just about everything in life seems to be affected by this sort of central governing ideology of basically like fascism.
Well, you know, the wonderful thing about fascism, nothing. I just had to slip that in there because it's as I said before, it is completely and utterly driving me insane. All right, and I'm suddenly starting to realize, because when I've been doing my documentary for a couple of months or whatever, and doing these interviews with people, and you know the scariest thing is, bro, every single time that we get down these bullet points from these people who are conspiracy theorists, and then go to the internet to try and Google what their words are and all of this stuff, we find mainstream headlines backing up every single point that conspiracy theorists are making.
Yeah, actually, that's right. Yeah, because more and more people in the media are sort of waking up. But the thing is,
it's not about that. What I find is interesting is that these
they want us to know. It's part of their ritual.
Yeah. It's like we'll tell you, but it'll be like in what would you say, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. We informed you ages ago. Yeah, but that was posted downstairs behind a cabinet. You know.
Well, exactly, yeah. And, you know, it just seems to me like there's a huge disconnect between, you know, popular grassroots movements and cut through. You know, it almost seems like there are sort of automated means of making sure that certain things get out there to people and certain things don't, because they know that, you know, a lot of these ideas are extremely popular. Nobody wants the TPPA. I haven't met a single person that, you know, everyone I know or have spoken to is against it. It's, you know,
it's probably because you don't have a bunch of, you know, millionaire, tosspot, mind-controlled scum as friends, Daryl.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, that they make up such a tiny amount of the pop. I think it's actually probably about 99% of people are against the TSIS, TSIR and the TPPA. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was like literally like we're talking about, you know, a few mentally ill people and the Illuminati that are down for it.
Okay, a few mentally ill people. You just described every major New Zealand commentator who's behind the TPPA. Thank you very much, Mike Hosking. Thank you very much, all the other conspiracy theorists. You know, it's just like, I don't get it, though. Well, actually, I do get it. And that's what really Fs me off, is that I know why they're lying, because they're parasitical scum. And the fact that people believe them really doesn't gel too well with me.
I think everyone is deeply skeptical, and you know, there's nobody out there saying, "Oh, the TPPA is good for us." You know,
that's not true. Joe Biden came out and said, "New Zealand, we love you. We're all together on freedom and democracy issues, and we've made some great progress on the TPPA, which excludes the entire public and everybody else from ever seeing what the F is in it."
I'm not even including people like Joe Biden, because the thing is, he is literally a robot, or he might as well be.
Joe Biden,
he's a mouthpiece, isn't he? His job is to sell. Well, it's not even that, is it? He's not doing a very good job. If it was to sell,
he's the vice president. Okay, he's the assistant con man in chief, and that's about it. That's all we have time for, unfortunately. Daryl Jones, ladies and gentlemen, based in the park. When we get it. Really interesting now, getting back onto New Zealand issues. I mean, obviously, we're just talking about the council and whatnot, and the presidents and vice presidents, Trans-Pacific Partnership. Have you noticed that there's just so many things that are happening all the time, all over the place, and there seems to be nothing you can really do to change the whole lot, you know, not by yourself anyway. But anyway, onto lighter issues. did you know that trolling's now illegal in New Zealand? No, I'm not kidding. It's quite interesting, really, because if you have a look, it's this thing called the Harmful Digital Communications Bill. Okay, this is starting to make a little bit of news around the world, and I was finding it quite quite scary myself, because whenever a government passes a law saying, "Oh, it's a bad thing for you to be saying these certain things or whatever," part of you thinks, "Oh, you know, that's there to protect people, etc." But the intelligent part of you that isn't brainwashed, mind controlled, and really frickin' stupid thinks, "Oh my god, this could be misused really massively. This could even affect me." When you extrapolate, you know. So in terms of the Harmful Digital Communications Bill, I just want to read out some of these principles, right? I'll paraphrase them for you so it doesn't sound like I'm reading through enormous lists of convoluted BS, which happen to somehow be very effective at deterring people from wanting to read them and knowing precisely in what ways we are being shafted. You might have noticed that I'm a little aggressive. Communication principles, right? These are the things that you've got to be really concerned about, right? So, a digital communication should not, all right? Every single line starts with this, okay? A digital communication should not. A digital communication should not. A digital communication should not. Right? And the ends of those sentences go like this. Disclose personal facts about a person. Be threatening, intimidating, or menacing. Be grossly offensive to a reasonable person in the position of the affected individual. Should not be indecent or obscene. Should not be used to harass an individual, make a false allegation, contain a matter that is published in breach of confidence, incite or encourage anyone to send a message to an individual for the purpose of causing harm to the individual. And it should not incite or encourage another individual to commit suicide. And should not denigrate an individual by reason of his or her color, race, ethnic, national origins, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or disability. and performing functions or exercising powers under this Act, the approved agency and courts must A, take account of the communication principles, and B, act consistently with the rights and freedoms contained within the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act. Now, freedom of speech is part of the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act, but of course, that's only if you know that it's part of it. If a cop comes up to you and says, you know, turn down that megaphone or whatever, or I'll arrest you, and you don't recite to him section 13 dash paragraph A line 28, you know, this right to use the megaphone in a public place, or quote the Michelle Reese case. By the way, I just made up that jargon there. Just don't try quoting that to a cop. You'll get smashed in the face with this big stick. I was just wondering, like, what was the potential misuse for this? Because as soon as you realise that this bill isn't underwritten by the New Zealand Bill of Rights, which governs free expression, etc., you kind of think about this, you know, you're not allowed to reveal sensitive personal facts about a person, you know? It's like, well, I was thinking about my John Key video. I revealed a lot of, you know, personal facts about him. And you can't reveal personal facts about a person, right? What constitutes personal fact? See, this is where the mind game and the word play start to go all over the place. And people are starting to freak out and go, oh my God, it's going to be used to censor this and free speech and whatever. You know, regardless of whether it says it's covered under the Bill of Rights Act. I mean, what do you think these people are? People who follow their own rules? No. You know, it's just like straight up assumption. What's the worst possible thing this could be used for? To censor all dissent and lock people in prison for up to 2 years? No, I'm serious. That's actually the, you know, prescribed punishment. Now, you'll notice that not a single one of these offences requires you to harm anybody. You don't even have to hurt them. You don't even have to touch their stuff or damage it. You literally just have to cause offence or mess with somebody a little bit and you can go to jail. Now, we all know that laws get updated as times change because nowadays people are too chicken to say stuff to your face, and things can actually really hurt you if they're published out on the internet, you know, like the classic case is if a man is accused of rape by a woman on a website. Oh, mate, that guy's life, guilty or not, is over. You know, just like that. Now, I think that's perfectly fair. If a woman does that, falsely accuses a guy of rape, and has his life destroyed, she deserves to go to jail, you know? Because he just destroyed a human life. Actual real harm was caused. It's measurable. I can understand that. But when there's no actual benchmark, no clearly defined principles, right? These principles seem very, very quite clear and to a reasonable person would be great. But the problem is the law's not like that, I don't think. It doesn't get governed by principles. It gets governed by technicalities. You know, like, for example, the technicality that acquitted doesn't actually mean not guilty. And not guilty doesn't actually mean innocent. You know? Everybody gets off on technicality. So my concern, and it may be or may not be unfounded, is that this kind of legislation will be used to suppress activists specifically. So if an activist is harassing a politician or revealing damaging personal information about their scumbaggery and what have you, then they'll use this thing just whoosh, but they won't use it this term. No. What they'll do is they'll wait for this current prime minister to get unelected before next term, and then they start to implement it and blame it on the previous prime minister and goes, oh, he implemented these terrible laws and we're just carrying them out because despite the fact that we can change any law we want ever without any recompense, we just have to follow this one. Which means you're part of a freaking agenda, scumbag.
You're part of a freaking agenda.
So painful. So nauseating is the scumbaggery. And how they hide behind really nice sounding things. Now, I was just thinking, right? How long, how many, rather, politicians would actually stay outside of jail for a significant period of time if this bill was actually not selectively enforced against activists, right? You know, you'd have half of parliament in jail with criminal records before the week is out. The amount of abuse I have seen politicians give members of the general public who mess with them on Facebook or Twitter or anything, you know, it's great. But, you know, let's have a look at this. Because ultimately, what harmful digital communications bill is about is about trolling, right? And I saw an article from the Libertarian Republic a little while ago, saying that trolling is now illegal in New Zealand. Haters can no longer hate. You know, isn't it tragic? And I get trolled like... like you wouldn't believe. That was what I was thinking about earlier. I wanted to record a Skype call with somebody. I just wanted somebody to get on a Skype call with me just so I can show them the screen share of my Facebook block page and show you just how long it takes to scroll to the very bottom of it. Oh my God. There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of scum that have been blocked, and it's just so good. Don't have to deal with them. And I sort of linked this kind of behavior, right? Abusing people, being nasty to them, that kind of thing. Or rather, Psychology Today did. You know, I'm not going to take credit for it. Narcissism, psychopathy, and sadism. All right. Narcissism is I love myself, screw everybody else. Psychopathy is I just hate everybody, you know. And sadism is, oh, I love the pleasure of hurting other people. So you can understand why these people would love Facebook. You can't get away from it, bro. They're everywhere, you know. It's like ants crawling out of the cracks in the concrete. It's freaking unbelievable. It's a parasitical plague of them, like it's in biblical times. Surprised the, I'm surprised Facebook, you know, a blue paragraphed kind of like borders aren't turning red like the freaking Nile under bloody Moses. Anyway. Apparently, narcissism, psychopathy, and sadism are the prime causes of trolling behavior. Right, so as I say before, it's assuming, you know, I'm right, and who knows, I might be wrong. Maybe the psychopathic government that's been selling us down to criminal bankers time after time that lie about absolutely everything every single time. Provably, are just actually finally doing something nice for a change. And they're not just mincing words and messing with people. You know, there's a remote possibility, and I'm prepared to accept that possibility exists. But as far as I'm concerned, it'll probably be used to just stifle a genuine debate about real issues rather than having anything to do with abuse. All right? Because if it had anything to do with abuse, I'd be the harmful digital communications bill's number one customer. All right? Reported. You know, there's so many nasty people online. I'm not sure if I want to actually send them to jail or anything like that. But the fact is, there's no freaking recompense. That's why I have to block them, you know, all the time. Constantly. It's like weeding a garden. I pulled the weeds out of the path like a month ago, and they're freaking back. I need to get down on my knees and do it again. That's what happens. Otherwise, your path looks like crap. And so does your Facebook profile. So does your YouTube comment sections. You need to comb over that stuff. And just wipe the scum out. You'll be surprised how much better your life is. You'll be like, oh my God. I'm saying controversial things that are actually true. And I'm barely getting any major abuse for it. Okay, you know, it's an unbelievably freeing sensation. You just go, ah, oh, that's nice. I should do enjoy that rather. But the kinds of trolls, you know, this is an interesting part. Like, for example, have anybody ever heard of a skeptic? You know, these people who for some reason are only skeptical of things that aren't pushed by the mainstream media, mainstream science, and mainstream politics. Like, basically, I'm skeptical of anything outside of the mainstream. You do realize what skepticism is, son. Skepticism is applying it to everything, including the lies you're told. Huh? Huh? Isn't that an original thought? Didn't think you'd had one? I didn't think so either, but there you go, son. And I saw this definition for these kind of charlatans. I just had to share it. All right, these people are a pseudo-skeptic. Right, you know what a pseudo-skeptic is? There's a long list of character attributes. And I'm going to read them to you, because it's just so fantastically concise. And every truther, everybody who's ever said anything about 9/11 or chemtrails or any conspiracy theory will know precisely a number of these character attributes have been fired at you by somebody who calls themselves a skeptic. You know, if you've ever talked to any of them. And I don't recommend it. Anyway, does not ask questions to try to understand new things, but judges them by whether or not they fit into orthodoxy. I mean, just think of the arrogance of that. Oh, does it fit with conventional wisdom? No. Oh, well, it must be ridiculous. You know, applies critical thinking, in quotation marks there, only to that which opposes orthodoxy or materialism, but never the status quo itself. You know? Is it questioning the status quo? Well, I better do some critical thinking about that. Is it blindly supporting the status quo? Okay, we're all good. We're all good. Just next thing. I see it happen, man. It's like it's slow motion. Like you're watching a car wreck that you're about to be a part of. Immediately judges as false and debunks anything that contradicts their paradigm. You know, just like, oh, that's BS. That's BS. You know, I get that all the time. In fact, I get it when I tell people headlines out of mainstream news and they don't believe it because I said it. You know, they just put this, oh, you're anti-establishment, therefore you don't ever use facts kind of motif. They're not interested in truth, evidence, or facts, only in defending their own views. All right. Now, me, I'm interested in defending my views if they're under attack by somebody who's full of crap. Okay, if they actually don't have any evidence. If they come up with something that contradicts my viewpoints, on the other hand, I am more than willing to keep talking to them. You know why? Because if you're not capable of talking to people, listening to people, and getting yourself some new facts to align your perceptions, then you're going to wind up being a schmuck. And that's not on my to-do list. You know, try to avoid it. It's actually on my do-not list. And also, these people are willing to lie and deceive in order to discredit their opponents. You know, it's absolutely true. They literally make up stuff. I remember I got in an argument with this one guy about, oh, you're doing this, you're saying this stuff about chemtrails, and there's this guy in such and such and blah, 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 who's in a terrible state. And I go, what guy? What freaking guy are you talking about? You're making up a fictional character that is having imaginary problems that you created as a justification for criticizing me talking about something that doesn't suit your paradigm, son. Sound a little bit stupid? Sound like a little bit of a deception there? Sound like you're lying to me and to yourself by creating the fictional character? I think so. Automatically dismisses and denies all data that contradicts the orthodoxy. This is a big one, especially with the fluoride movement. You go, hey, look, there's several thousand peer-reviewed studies that say fluoride's good for teeth. And sure enough, there are these, studies out there. And they only study teeth. You know? As if it's the only organ in the body. As if it's the only thing that gets affected. As if 3,000 studies on teeth equates to the entire understanding of fluoride's effect on the human body. Whereas there are numerous other studies that aren't peer-reviewed. By the way, the peer-reviewed process has been corrupted, and just like pseudo-skeptics, they only use it to justify stuff that they've already done, and a lot of the studies are probably industry funded. I'm just assuming because I'm a really cynical SOB. anyway, are judgmental and quick to draw conclusions about things they know little or nothing about. You know, I love that. Commenting on things from a point of 0 point experience. Okay, like, how much experience do you have in this? Well, absolutely none. Oh, okay, well, surely your opinion must be worth listening to, and it certainly must be valid. It's not. It's just not that valid. Just like the next one, scoffs and ridicules what they oppose instead of using objective analysis and examination. It's like having an argument with a monkey who literally like poos into his own hand and then chucks it at your face when you say something he doesn't like. You know, they're just rude people. And they start using insults against you, you know? I don't like it. When faced with evidence or facts they can't refute, that uses semantics, word games, and denial to try to obfuscate the issue. You know, it's kind of like my wife. When you get to the point in an argument with the one that you love, and you know that they're wrong, they know that they're wrong, they still try to find a way around it. You know, just look over here. Oh, would you like to have sex, baby? I'm really great. You sneaky devil, of course. Anyway, unable to adapt their paradigms to new evidence and denies data which doesn't fit into them, you know? And that's the problem. If the facts don't fit your theory, you're supposed to change your mother-loving theory, not deny the facts. Now, controvert it. Wait, is controvert it the right word usage there? I certainly hope so. Views the scientific Views the scientific establishment as a religion and authority to be taken on faith and never questioned or challenged. Does not understand the difference between the scientific process and methodology and the scientific establishment institution. Assumes that the scientific establishment is objective and unbiased and free of politics, corruption, control, censorship and suppression for no other reason than blind faith in reality. Oh, sorry, blind faith in authority. And will never admit that they're wrong, no matter what, regardless of evidence. I admit that I'm wrong almost on a daily basis, it seems like, because I'm wrong about so much stuff. It's part of, you know, being a frickin' adult. You go, okay, I admit it, I'm wrong. And you move on. You continue being right. That's the thing. When you're wrong all the time, it means you're being corrected. To be corrected means you're no longer wrong because you move from one side to the other. It's something you're actually supposed to like being. I like being wrong. Also because I have a really, really negative opinion about things, and being wrong is often viewed by me as a pleasant surprise. Because, you know, the world's not a very happy place, is it? Especially not with people like pseudo-skeptics around. Obfuscating issues, confusing people, denying stuff that's blatant right in front of their face, never being human about it, never admitting they're wrong. They're under mind control. And I'm not talking about these people as if, you know, they're subpar, they're less than human, or like, my life is worth more than them, or I'm looking down on them, or anything like that. Okay? Far from it. I don't know what the point is. All I want to do is talk about this issue. Because for goodness sake, it's an impediment that is in the way of progress, human progress, at a very deep level. Because this exact kind of programming, denial of reality, and borderline scumbaggery is just, it's damaging. It's restricting. It's not taking the human journey in a better direction. It is trying to stop the human journey. To have an establishment means you've actually got something established. There's nothing frickin' established at all. Everything's in a constant state of change, isn't it? Can you name me one thing in 100 years that just hadn't changed? Apart from David Rockefeller, you know. Oh, shit. Is he over 100 years old? I don't know. But for goodness sake, these people just don't die. But there's a difference between, just living for a lot of years and aging well. These elite scumbags have not aged well. You know, and that's what happens, decades of lying. You know, you can see it on the face of John Key, the Prime Minister. he's pumping out 1,000 lies a day, you know, minimum. You know, we've got this thing called a New Zealand debt clock, and it's like $740 a second or something crazy. In fact, I think maybe $740 a second is how much our country, with only 4 million people, pays per second in interest. But partly because of this guy. If you look at this graph, yeah, it's like down here at about $8 billion, you know, debt for 4 million people. And now it's like nearly $100 billion, and that's just the on the books debts. That's not including all the 100+ billion in off the book derivatives debts. Guess who used to be the head of European bond and derivative trade at the head of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York? Did you guess it was the Prime Minister, John Key, who got elected to save us from the financial crisis that he admitted that he helped cause on Breakfast TV? You know, you can't make this stuff up. And it just gets worse. Worse and worse and worse. You, there's no end to it. Okay, there's no end to the scumbaggery. And speaking of scumbaggery, I'm talking about like real, real hardcore scumbaggery. The TPPA, Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. Hopefully people have heard of this thing. If they haven't, oh my God, we're so screwed. Have you noticed that there's this epidemic of talk radio and news outlets freaking out about stuff? You know, emergency broadcast this, emergency transmission that. It's always emergency with these people. Now, I don't know if that's the exact response I'm going to take on it. You know, I feel that it's very important and needs to be put out, but I think it's just about the clicks, really. If you say it's emergency, if you say it's urgent or such and such, blah, 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 the sky is falling kind of headlines, more people will watch your video. And it's just that simple, isn't it? Cooler heads do not prevail if the bulk of the audience online don't have cool heads. It means the person who freaks out the most is the one to prevail. You know, should I sit here and scream, you know, become a part of the crowd, worry about everything and freak the hell out? In the case of the TPPA, yeah. All right. And I'm not playing anymore. This is some real, real dark stuff going down here. Okay. So first of all, let's just put a few things on the frickin' table here, shall we? Can we all finally agree? And I know that I'm preaching to the choir here, so it kind of makes it a bit redundant, which also makes me slightly more angry. But can we all finally agree and accept that there is a corporate fascist world government or new world order being set up? Please? You know, can we just admit that now? Companies take control of your government, and they do it at a global level. It's corporate fascist government. New World Order. What have we been telling you for decades? You know? Well, not me necessarily. I'm only just a young pup. I've not even put full 10 years in yet. But what have people been saying? You know? 30, 40, 50 years ago, people have been talking about this. Even longer. And here it is, rolling right out. And everybody's freaking out. And so they should be. Will it be enough, though? Will it be, you know, just the little bit that you need to get it stopped? Is there enough protesting that can be done? Are there enough documents that can be leaked? Because once it's in place, you're never getting out of it, is it? You know? We don't even know what's in it. Won't know it until a few years out. And what's problematic is that I've seen the mainstream media commentators like basically just say, well, can we just stop the conspiracy theories and just get on with it? Really? Just get on with signing a secret treaty. Oh my God. That gives me a really, really good idea to do next hour. I saw this article. What was it, like 10 things that the people have gotten wrong or don't want to grasp, you know, about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And I couldn't even read through the first couple of lines of this article because it was just, first of all, just from the headline, knowing what I know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and let's bring it down a notch. I don't necessarily know about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, and technically nobody does. You know why? Because it's freaking secret, okay? Pretty straightforward. Nobody knows what the F they're effing talking about. So, in order to know what the F you're effing talking about, pseudo-skeptics out there, here's what you do. You have a look at this little thing called freaking history. And you go, oh, look, here's a bunch of other trade deals that also sounded really nice, and wound up screwing over everybody. You know what happened in Yugoslavia before the Kosovo War? Of course you don't, because you don't question your current paradigm, son. What they did is they signed a trade deal, and after a year of that trade deal being signed, they laid off 500,000 workers and closed 1,100 industrial firms, which was about half of their industrial firms. And the reason why they were capable of doing that is because these trade deals come with a whole lot of red tape that they put on all your businesses so that you can't even set up or run a freaking business. Right? And then they got really effed off with that, didn't want to do that anymore, and then got invaded by NATO. Okay, so what does a militaristic corporate fascist government look like? It looks like a really nice trade deal sold to everybody as if it's the best thing since sliced bread, that you should shut up, get on with it, and you will all enjoy the riches and benefits, when realizing that, A, you're going to be out of the job, son, and all your natural resources are going to get extracted by these mining and mineral operations and oil excavators and goodness knows whoever the hell, okay? Your country and you and all of your people are a resource to these people. They have about as much emotional investment in you and your survival and your happiness as you would the tissue that you last blew your nose on. That's how much they care. They really don't. And I'm just, biggest belief to me, you know, knowing as much as I know, seeing as much scumbaggery as I've seen, I just almost feel like it's gonna pass, you know? Almost feel like it's too freaking late. But the thing about me is, I'll do things like that and I'll say, oh, it's too late and what have you, but I'll still fight it nonetheless. I don't give a hell, you know? It's not like I'm in it to win it. as far as I'm concerned, life is not a game. It's not like a win or lose thing. It's more like a pass fail. You know? You either are worth your own existence or you're not. And as far as I'm concerned, the people who do not fight for the existence of others and freedom and rights and things of that nature don't deserve their own. And the people that actively seek to destroy them don't deserve anything. But eventually everything's going to come to a head, isn't it? Now, I reckon that after the TPPA is passed, New Zealand's new flag should be a silhouette. You know, like silver background with a black silhouette. And it'll be of a Kiwi bird getting raped from behind by a man in a top hat and coattails. You know, thank you. It's the TPPA in a nutshell. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. End of story. And, you know, but then again, there's another point I want to raise here, is that I'm frankly sick of everyone sitting back and talking about the plans, operations, and other bad things that haven't yet happened, okay? TPPA is happening, but it hasn't yet happened. It hasn't been implemented. It hasn't been signed into law. It's not, it's not in effect just yet, okay? Not until the fat lady sings, all right? And people are like whinging about this all over the place and being real miserable about it, you know? As if they're waiting for the situation to be so bad that they can't make a difference, you know? And it's like, bro, you're not dead yet. Once you've been killed, then you've got an excuse to do nothing. Okay? We're talking about the country, the world, on the line here. The corporate fascist banking scum will control everything if you do nothing. That's as simple as the equation seems to me. Now, for saying these kind of things, again, talking about them a lot online, is you get beset by a lot of trolls, you know? A lot of my listeners, they go, oh, they're just paid agents or anything. And it's like, how do you know that? You don't know that they're paid agents. You do know that there are paid agents because documents have been leaked, you know, plans and what have you to hire people to cognitively infiltrate the 9/11 truth movement and such and blah, blah, blah. So you know that agents and trolls are out there. But what I find strange is that this proclivity to assume guilt along that vein without any real evidence. Maybe they were just a knob, bro. Maybe they just weren't a very nice person. Perhaps they weren't breastfed as a child. You don't know. Neither do I. All I know is I don't like them. They're mean to me, and they're saying real nasty things. So luckily, I can just block, and the scum is gone. But in addition to trolls, I also get inundated with people with delusions of grandeur, you know, using like the TPPA thing, and they're like, oh, we could all solve this but easily by doing this, that, and the other, you know. It's just, for goodness sake, all right? I know all about delusions of grandeur. I embody them daily, right? But I have a track record of actually achieving some of these delusions. These people do not. They have no record of achieving anything, and they'll come up and they'll criticize me for doing something that they've never done and tell me how I can do it better when they've never been able to do it. You know, it's just madness, you know. And they think they can solve all the world's problems by rambling nonsensical drivel, you know, and they tell me to grow up. I mean how much more childish can you get? They put their heads down and It's just stupid, right? And I saw this. I noticed as well that I'm saying, you know, people are stupid and what have you. While true, it's a negative thought process, and it almost makes me feel justified, like as if I'm better than other people, when I'm not. I'm just not better than other people. I've just learned some stuff that they haven't. And I'm not living their life, okay? And I enjoy my life a bit better than they enjoy theirs. And that's all it is. And I'd like everybody to be able to enjoy their life. But, you know, I saw this meme on Facebook, and it says, I think everybody should have a retail job at some point in their life, as it teaches you an ability that many people lack. The ability to act like a polite and well-mannered human being, no matter how much crap other people give you. And I was like, well, having a job then is merely a way to empathize with other slaves who also hate their bosses, hate the customers, and hate their life. I've been there, and I've done that, but I was never in retail. You learn to hate all those things just by being employed. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and we'll be right back after the break. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Also, bear in mind, you can listen to it at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. I'm really good at doing promos. Like, what can I say? there's so many good affiliates, actually. No, seriously, go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and just down on the right hand side of the page, there's this little slider that should shuffle, and there's maybe even 20 something stations / little broadcasting sites around New Zealand that you can pick it up even on the radio, episodes of the show, that kind of thing, and I am really grateful. To all the people who rebroadcast the show, all the people who, you know, steal my archives and upload them on their own websites and thieve hits from me, it just helps to spread the message, because I think we were talking about in the previous hour, or it might have been on another show I was on, in fact, that you get more results out of cooperation than you do from competition. And I'm not working against anybody apart from people who are working against humanity in general. You know, that's basically the deal. You serve humanity or you're not a member of it. You know, because by a stretch of the imagination, you're not freaking human unless you stand up against inhuman scum. I love the word scum. Like, doesn't anybody else love the word scum? It just rolls off the tongue, like a cunning linguist. And I think what we were talking about at the last hour, sorry, to switch on you and pull a tangent, was the TPPA. All right, so this is what can be achieved when certain criminal elements, you know, come together and just go, hey, let's just take control of everybody's stuff. So you can see what can be achieved. And also notice, I don't know, I just had an argument on a thread with somebody the other day about, you know, certain places aren't a good place to promote certain things, you know, because that was like in gig promotion and music events and what have you. And I kind of understand that, because talk radio is the exact same thing. You don't invite people on your shows if they're going to sit there a lot of the time promoting their own network. You know, you talk about your own shows and what have you, but we've got this competitive nature in the talk radio circuit, in all forms of entertainment, which, in my opinion, the business practice is kind of becoming obsolete, and we actually can do better and thrive more prosperously if we're working together rather than competing for listeners, competing for advertisers, that kind of thing. Just a thought. Just wanted to plant that seed out there, because I really want everybody to get along. I've always wanted people to get the hell along. You know, realize who your enemy is and realize who your enemy isn't. And if somebody who isn't your enemy comes up to you and asks for help or you know, helps themselves and uses you to do it, and they're not doing any harm or whatever, just let them get away with it, you know? No need to reprimand them or, you know, call them names or any of that kind of stuff. But that's just my thoughts on it. Because, you know, deep down I'm a big softy. Anyway, 10 things TPP critics don't want you to grasp. And you'll love the name of the author to this article. I cackled when I first heard it. Patrick Smelly. Not Smelly with a Y, but Smelly with an IE. So he's like an example of just how smelly a person can be. I just came up with that quip. You know, it's just too easy. You know, I wish there was some challenge in my work. If there wasn't like a sexual scandal with a guy named Anthony Weiner, I was like, man, the jokes are just too obvious. You know? am I a talk radio show host talking about truth, or am I a comedian delivering the news? I don't know. Sometimes the lines blur. You ever notice that dynamic? When you listen to a stand-up comedian and they tell you the news, and you and you watch the news, and you scoff at it because it's a freaking joke. You know, I think that's one of the interesting parts about this job, is sometimes it's just too easy. Because when you know the truth and somebody else is just full of BS, and or is an ignorant pseudo-skeptic, deconstructing what they're talking about is easy, but it's laborious. You ever notice how it takes a lot of evidence to prove a negative, doesn't it? So somebody's got to throw up all this nonsense, and then you just got to bang it down. It's like whack-a-mole. They just come up with all this BS, and it's their job as the you know, the real media to do their job for them. And by that, I mean expose them for the fraudulent, lying, manipulative, misleading, incompetent trash that they are. By the way, if you're in mainstream media and you're listening to this and you feel offended by that remark, then you're probably not one of the scum that I'm talking about. And you probably do know the exact kind of scum that I'm talking about. So no offense is intended towards you, and you should act like I do. Don't take offense unless it's intended, because there's no point. If you want to get the truth out or whatever, mainstream media is probably not the place to get it out in such a frequent batch as perhaps having alternative media, but it has greater reach, and you can occasionally slip things in. Do it on the sly. You know what side of the bread is buttered. You know what to report on and what not to a large degree. But find the corners. Find the territory that hasn't been covered yet and try and slip these little things in there. Do your job, but do your job, if you know what I mean. Your job as a media douchebag is to mislead people, but your job as a human being is to tell them the truth. And if you're in the position, you have a responsibility to use that position for something greater. And if you give it a big whirl and you go, yeah, well, everything, you know, and you just start telling the truth point blank, you're going to lose your show. You're going to lose your job, you know. It's just that simple. So, you know, sometimes it's good to just sit back and be that one guy that occasionally comes out with a nice, good story. Don't we need that in the alternative media, you know? Somebody who comes out in the mainstream media and is, like, not a douchebag? So that we don't have to hate all of them? And just dislike the institutions that they're a part of? It's not about the person, it's about the institution. It's not about the individual action, it's about the consequences of the entirety of the apparatus. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about you. Here I am making up fictional characters that aren't listening to my show. Back in the day, when Trade Minister Tim Grosser was just another diplomat assisting World Trade Organization negotiations, he had to run a committee involving five big nations on a deadlocked issue. So, Minister now of Trade, Tim Grosser, used to be a diplomat working with the World Trade Organization. Do you know how nasty the World Trade Organization is? That they're kind of like an attack dog that the World Bank, IMF, and things of that nature use to corporately control countries and take them the F out, exactly as trade deals are designed to do? Yeah? If you didn't know that, you know it now. But, however, I'm just encapsulating things. I'm only just going to tell you, like, little elements and what I've made of the situation after a goodness knows how much research, how many documentaries, how many freaking interviews I've done personally. Okay? Getting that information in is much better than just having one douchebag radio show host interpretation of it. You got to listen to a lot of different people, look through a lot of different sources. Don't just take me at my word. For all we know, I could be completely wrong, and the World Trade Organization had never done nothing to nobody, and it's all really good, and the establishment in the New World Order doesn't exist, and nobody's trying to enslave you or kill you or get your country into massive unpayable debt and take away all your assets and everything. You know, you wake up tomorrow and that would just suddenly be the reality. Sweet! I'm not a slave! Yay! Oh, wait. No, this is an unfortunate thing called reality. And I've said it many times, cynicism helps you deal with it because it makes it a little bit less frustrating and maybe a little less surprising when things happen the way that they do.
you know, and you kind of get comfortable with it, and you go, okay, well, there you go. I'm right again. That's unfortunate. So you begin to hate being right. Now, this is the correct mentality, I think. You know? Do you agree? The worst thing that you can get into an argument with is a person who just has to be right. I hate being right. You know? I really... Unless I'm correcting somebody who's wrong or actually helping somebody else come to a deeper conclusion or vice versa, you know, I don't think there's even any need for an argument. If one side cannot be enlightened. Because as far as I know, every argument that I've had with somebody who's willing to accept new information has resulted in me getting new information and getting even better understanding about the issue that I was informing this person about, and both of us benefit from the interaction. Imagine if that was the way it was. Just, you know, send out that kind of positive vibe and you go, hey, man, that's the way it's supposed to be. People with their ideas and stuff, sharing them, and actually learning something, man. Imagine how different the political process would be if somebody says, ah, privatizing everything and giving it to international corporations that want to enslave and kill everybody isn't such a good idea. I don't think I'll actually propose this amendment, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just stepping down as Prime Minister for a bit, just for a second, until I can get my head read and figure out how long I've been crazy to believe that killing and enslaving people and promoting the mechanisms that facilitate that was a good idea, was a compassionate idea. You know, I'm just wondering how many of the people that are actually doing all of this evil stuff are actually psychopaths who can't feel bad about it, and how many of them are just ordinary good people with a conscience who just up to this point haven't actually seen the consequences of their action upon other people. They've had nothing to place their empathy upon. What if they're just waiting to wake up? What if the whole command structure is full of those kind of people who've had this stuff brainwashed into them and they've been justifying it and what have you? What if, you know, one day they all just kind of like go, oh, this isn't good. I've actually got a lot of power and wealth, and I'm actually in a lot of positions of influence. I could stop this. But then you got to worry about all the other people of great power and wealth that are around you, and how many of them don't have a conscience like you do. Yeah, just think about that predicament in a filmography kind of way, you know. Think about in a fictional context. Because the problem with fiction is that it has to make sense. Non-fiction doesn't. Real interaction isn't like that. It's slightly different. Now, I've got this article to read here, don't I? Applying the dark arts of trade negotiation, he inserted a different minor error into each of the five drafts distributed. If anyone leaked, he'd know who it was. Okay. So, this is our trade minister, who somehow knows how to prevent stuff from being leaked, and if it does get leaked, he knows who the rat is, kind of thing. Does that sound like a person you can trust? Does that sound like a person who trusts you? So that's the WTO for you, all in a nutshell, isn't it? While New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters may claim that WTO negotiating documents are always made public, the truth is those documents themselves are the product of negotiation, and negotiations involve secrets. Yeah, sure. Of course, every negotiation involves secrets, but not secrets that are kept secret after the measures are put in place, after the negotiations are concluded. That's what this person, Mr. Smelly, I'm not going to get over that in a hurry. His name's actually Patrick Smelly. I could probably get done under the Digital Communications Bill for this. Okay, in which case, there's a clause in the Digital Communication Bills where you can apologise, and also reasonable people won't pay attention to it, and there's also a bit of freedom of speech issue here. So I apologise to Mr. Patrick Smelly. And if I got the pronunciation wrong and it's actually deeply offensive, then I apologise again and I retract my previous statements. But I'm still going to broadcast them. And this guy here says, no one starts a trade me auction with their best price. Well, actually, I do. Like, all the time. I was just like, well, this is as cheap or as good as I can do, isn't it? Maybe I'm not a smart negotiator then. Maybe the art of negotiating is actually learning how to swindle the other guy through various forms of subterfuge and secrecy. This is what this article seems to be promoting to my mind, you know. It's just like, subterfuge and secrecy are good, you know. It's perfectly okay to do things behind people's back if it means that you get something good out of it. Well, you never know. There's plenty of things that can be innocuous. Plenty of things that can be appearing to be innocuous and are actually quite malign. So that's number one on a list of the things that opponents of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement don't want you to understand. So it's like accusing people who are opposing a corporate takeover and the setup of a global government corporate New World Order fascist thing as, you know, like, we're just trying to prevent people from knowing things. You know, these are the things we don't want you to know about our own arguments. Now, some people are like that. I'm not. If there's flaws in my arguments, point them out to me. I'll gladly hear you. Number two, the bogey of corporations being able to sue governments is not only overblown, but corporations can do that now without a TPPA. Look across the Tasman, where Big Tobacco is suing the government over its plan to enforce plain packaging for cigarettes. Suing them, mind you, ladies and gentlemen, in the Australian court against the Australian government who controls that court, as opposed to in the World Court, which is controlled by the World Trade Organization, which is financed by the corporations who are the ones drafting the treaty. You see how that works? How they get you in a big bind and you have no ability to regulate your own laws? That's what this guy doesn't want you to know. This is a thing about psychopaths. I'm not going to call this guy a psychopath, but this is one of their characteristics nonetheless. Take what they say. And the direct opposite is actually the case. So this guy is saying, these are 10 things I don't want to tell you are true. These are 10 things I'm going to lie about. These are 10 things I'm going to deceive you with. These are 10 fingers I'm going to point at the people who oppose me and my corporate masters, you know, whatever. I don't understand the intentions. Who knows? Again, he might just be a person of good conscience who's just deceived, you know? And I know that sounds arrogant of me, but at the end of the day, dude, when you're wrong, you're wrong. Get over it. Build a bridge. Number three, corporations might try to sue, but they'll be whistling if the government is acting in the public interest, raising new taxes, protecting the environment, or regulating for public health reasons won't be excuses to mount court action. That's absolutely untrue. Because every single time a corporation saves money, okay, and here's the other thing, the usage of the word corporation, is that not overused, you know? Don't you actually feel like kind of like your fist balling up when you hear the word corporation? You know, it's like a corpus callosum. It's supposed to connect these two thingies that are going on. And corporations were originally started out so that you wouldn't lose all of your personal effects. If your business went under, you wouldn't lose your house and throw your family out on the street, as happens to people who have debts when they start businesses. You know, limited liability. That's the whole idea of it. Where we went wrong is by giving these limited liability companies rights. These are not human beings, all right? People who work at the company have rights. People who work for the company have rights. People who run the company have rights. But the company itself doesn't have rights. A company can't speak. A company can't have a child. A company cannot come up with an idea. A company can't paint a picture. This is an abstraction. And it's madness to think that an entity like that, that is only an abstraction, that does not really exist, such as a corporation, which is merely a conglomeration of a whole bunch of different elements that are working together, to consider that entity to have rights. Human rights, in fact. Because it's not, by very definition, human. Is a building human? No. The reason why they wanted to give the corporation rights is because the psychopaths at the head of those corporations know that humans can get away with a lot of things that companies can't. You know? Isn't that interesting? I mean, let's say the corporation breaks a rule. Do you throw the company in jail? You know, just like put the handcuffs on the doors at the front of it. You know, the plaza has been arrested. I'm gonna haul the skyscraper away. I mean, you know, that's the thing about having human rights, is that we're also human, which means those rights can just be taken away from you if you've been naughty. But the corporations that have been naughty don't get their rights taken away from them, do they? No, they just pay up a little bit of money and keep operating and breaking the law. So what do you think? That if you pass a law that threatens these people's profits by not allowing them to very cheaply dump toxic waste in a river, for example. This isn't an extreme example. Just for the fun of it, it might be a very small, innocuous example that could slowly snowball into something really horrific. If you stop them from being able to do that, you're decreasing their profits, and under the TPPA, if your profits aren't being served by the company, or aren't being served by the government, rather, then you sue them for your lost profits, okay? That's the whole part about the clause of being able to sue governments for lost profits. Why in the F do you think that's there unless it's when they're passing a law that stops you from making as much profit? I mean, how is this even difficult to comprehend? It's not. Unless. No, in fact, there is not unless. It's just that easy. Like the juice loosener. Number 4. United States corporate interests are obviously among those seeking influence on the TPP agenda. And this guy says, but that doesn't mean the US Senate and Congress are on board. Well, dude, do you know what the US Senate and Congress are now? They're nothing. Do you know what an executive order is? It's everything. Okay? And he goes on to say that's why US President Obama is having such trouble getting fast-track authority to negotiate the TPP. And guess what he just got? Fast-track authority! Next! Ka-ping! See, Dr. Jane Kelsey, who's like a big anti-TPP activist, you know, wrote her own rebuttal to this. And she says, oh, there's so many fallacies, I can't recite them all. You know, but I've got nearly an hour, all right, of talk radio to fill up here. And by goodness, this got my blood boiling, so I thought this would be a good idea. Dear God, I'm running out of time. I may not have enough time to expose this scumbaggery and ramble. Number 5. US politicians know less about what's in the TPP negotiating documents than the US corporate lobbies. Really? It doesn't matter about the US corporate lobbies. What matters is the 1,000 companies that have their representatives on the negotiating panel. It doesn't matter about corporate lobbies. It doesn't matter whether the US politicians know, because the US politicians know as much as the rest of us. Nothing. Because it's an effing secret. How can I... Oh. Have you ever noticed that when you encounter somebody with such belligerent nonsense that your brain almost goes into shock? You feel like your eye's about to twitch and you're about to burst a blood vessel. So it must be a plot, right? Well, actually, no. Politicians in the US and in New Zealand, for that matter, can agree to maintain confidentiality and be briefed on whatever they like with respect to the TPP. They can be briefed on whatever they like with respect to the TPP, except being able to see what the F's in it or being able to reveal it to the public. Labour's Trade and Foreign Affairs spokesman Phil Goff and David Shearer avail themselves to this benefit. They support the Trans-Pacific Partnership along with Shane Jones and some other Labour heavy hitters. Again, he's making the mistake that there's a difference between the left and the right. There isn't, son. They're working for the same corporate frickin' lapdogs that pay their campaign. All right? That's just that simple. Why can everybody not be as cynical as me? Stuff would get done so much quicker. You know, you'd just be like, I'm not going to listen to your lies. I'm just going to cynically just say, nah, F off, go to jail. Even if leader David Cunliffe is a leaf in the wind as he tries to balance what he knows is right and what his backers on the left of the Labour Party expect. Look, I saw a speech of David Cunliffe saying, we don't know what's in the TPP, even after the document was leaked. So, and he even said that he read it in the House of Parliament. So he at least knows some stuff that's in it. I don't want to disparage anybody, but I see everybody covering up. And have you noticed that when your country's under attack, you see everybody who's covering up for the attack as some kind of traitor? You know, it gets people at each other's throats. And it cuts both ways as well. Like, for example, somebody who thinks this TPP is a good thing, somebody who's wrong, might think that I'm a traitor for even daring to criticise it. It's unbelievable. Number 6. No one knows what the TPP could be worth to the New Zealand economy, so the Sustainability Council is right to question the 5.16 billion figure the government has used based on estimates from the internationally respected Peterson Institute and peer-reviewed by an independent local bastion of credible number crunching, the New Zealand Institute of Economic Research. Now, if the New Zealand Institute of Economic Research had anything good going for them, do you think we would have gone from $8 billion to $100 billion in debt in 8 years? No? Oh, well, maybe then appealing to their authority on how to keep the economy running and commenting about what's good for it, etc., you could probably just throw it out completely, never listen to them, and you'd run the economy better, I'm betting. And what they're doing here is betting, right? They say, oh, we're going to have $5.16 billion extra dollars in the economy. What the hell does that matter when you've got $100 billion of debt and another $20 billion coming every year? All right? That's unbelievable. Number 7. The US is railroading its agenda because it's just a big bully. That's not what you get from reading the WikiLeaks versions of negotiation drafts. They show the US on the back foot on many of the most contentious issues. That's because the US is populated by people, okay? What do you expect? You know? You can't actually, like, say, oh, it's a country doing this. No. There's people within that country. Some of them have different opinions and things, right? US media reports suggest the US is under pressure from emerging economies involved in the TPP to weaken environmental protections it would like to insist on. Now, here's the other thing. Environmental protections. It just screams Agenda 21 to me, you know, like, oh, you know, we're going to protect the environment and make sure everybody's slaved and happy. Anyway. As far as some poorer countries are concerned, regulating for the environment is just rich country code for new ways to block market access and keep them poor. No, actually, regulating the environment is a way of, shall we say, controlling how your society and your government works. Okay? Think about the word environment. It means everything around you. Okay? So if you're going to regulate the environment, you're going to regulate everything. So that's the foot in the door. That's how they get this. That's how they get this kind of stuff through. And I know this is ironic because, you know, before we're talking about if a government passes an environmental regulation that the corporations don't want, they'll go and they'll sue them. But that's just as true as the fact that if you've got really expensive environmental regulations that you have to impose in order to have this company come in, and they can make you impose that stuff by threat of suing you if you don't bring certain stuff up to scratch, then you keep poor. So both things are right from different perspectives. That's how dastardly this stuff is, and that's how cleverly worded and avoided the true issues are. Number eight, this is the end of Pharmac. Now, for those of you overseas who don't know, Pharmac is kind of like New Zealand's little way of giving out drugs to people, more or less, which incidentally are one of the leading causes of death in New Zealand, so I'm not I'm not sticking up for Pharmac or the public health system in general, because again, leading cause of death. I'm not kidding either. This is their own statistics that they released. Now this guy says balderdash. How many times does Grocer have to back New Zealand's gutsy Labour-led approach to ensuring the country has the cheapest versions of modern medicines it can get? That's a bottom line. We're not signing if Pharmac is compromised. Really? Are you kidding? We're not going to sign if this one thing is compromised? Who said that? You know? You basing that on what? Grocer's track record of setting Pharmac up. Okay? Maybe he was just setting it up to be plundered. Like our entire economy, for example. But, I don't know. Can you trust somebody to not compromise your country? If there's incentives that you're not even aware of. Don't know. I just don't know. And the problem with trust is that it has to be earned. And a lot of people don't know these politicians. They haven't been around them. They haven't been having, drinks around the fire with them. They haven't been babysitting their kids when you want to take your missus out to dinner or something on your anniversary. They're not really part of your life. You can't trust somebody who's not part of your life, in my opinion. Everybody looks at this person on TV and they go, oh, he's really trustworthy, he's really trustworthy. You really can't, you know? And I realize as a radio show host, this sounds very ironic, but you can't even really trust me, okay? You don't know me. And just like I don't know Tim Grocer, I don't know what he's capable of. Not saying, you know, be very suspicious of everybody and all paranoid and everything, but just, for goodness sake, don't trust people implicitly if you don't know that they can be implicitly trusted, and you know that for a fact. It's just, it's common sense, isn't it? Number nine, the deal will be done behind closed doors. And this guy says, it can't be. Every parliament of every country involved will have to ratify any deal signed by leaders. That could take years. It will ensure public scrutiny of the detail. Really? Really? And guess what one of the main things about the TPPA is? Even if your politicians get to read it, which I'm not sure they actually will get to, the public won't be able to view it until several years after it's passed. I think it might even be 4 years. How long's a US presidential term? I believe it's 4 years. So you're saying whoever the heck gets elected won't have to deal with any of the fallout of the TPPA, only the next guy after him, when everybody's forgotten about it. Hmm? When people are destitute in the streets, and 50% of your industries shut down, you've got 30% unemployment, And you got these really, really wealthy cats in your country who are just cruising around in the really expensive cars. Nobody can afford a gallon of gas. Food price through the roof. Can't find a house to save your life. You never own a house. As long as you live, no matter how hard you try, never. Never. Just think about that, man. Everybody who's young, everybody who's coming out of school today will never own a home. Ever. That just breaks my frickin' heart. Because of scum like this. I mean, they implicitly say that we're not going to be able to know until after it's already done. And then once we're in for life, innit? That's what my understanding has been. Number 10. It's a done deal. Tell that to Grocer and Mike Moore and every other politician who ever wasted a chunk of their lives trying to negotiate the Doha round of the WTO negotiations. Okay, well, tell that to the people who negotiated other things that happened ages ago that have nothing to do with the TPP. Uh-huh. And what happened with all of those trade deals? By chance did all of these other places get completely screwed up and ravaged by corporate raiders? They probably did, didn't they? I don't have the evidence of that. I'm just assuming because that's the most likely scenario. As bad as I can possibly imagine it, that's probably what happened. It's called Fockham's Razor. The Doha failure is one of the reasons that regional rather than global free trade agreement efforts like TPP have emerged. There's no guarantee TPP will come in to land, and if it doesn't, that will be a shame for New Zealand. Oh yeah, it'll be a real shame for us if we don't get a global corporate fascist government set up apparatus to enslave us criminally and scumbaggerarily. Maybe it was like variants of the word scumbaggery, scumbaggerarily. It's actually quite nice. I think I'll keep it for later years, which has done so well from the liberalisation of trade as an exporting nation and suffered such grievous discrimination when locked out of the world's wealthiest markets. Okay, so we really benefit from trade. Yes, we do. And we currently do. I get that. And there's no way I'm saying, you know, let's shut up shop and stop trading with people because it'll kill the country. What's problematic is that we're going to be threatened if we don't sign this, right? There's a list that you can be put on if the United States doesn't like how you're acting with your trading behaviors and whatnot. And this means that they'll stop trading with you. It becomes much more difficult. It's kind of like, I don't know, trying to fly when you're on the no-fly list. It becomes somewhat of a difficult exercise trying to trade when you're on the bad traders list. You know, like on the terror watch list and whatnot. Probably would have been a better idea. I don't like the idea of lists. You know, everybody's got a list. You know, revenge. A revenge list. That's kind of nice, isn't it? And the point that this guy's trying to make is completely irrelevant because it's already on record. It's already on record that the US pops countries who don't do their bidding in negotiation rounds on a list with the other naughty children. It's what they do. And then naughty child has to go to his room and he ain't got no more money. And that's what's going on. Straight up. So there you are. 10 things TPP critics do not want you to grasp by Patrick Smelly. Rebutted by Vinnie Eastwood. You're welcome. You're very, very welcome. Because honestly, there are so many good people that are sticking up for this country and yours by reading these long, boring, dull documents. I'm lucky. I don't have to do that. All I have to do is interview the people who do. Okay? Which means my knowledge is not quite as in depth. But at the same time, I can kind of give you the gist of what they're saying much better than they can themselves, because I'm good like that. You know? Guy tried to tell me like a story. It took him 5 minutes to tell me the story. And then I was like, okay, it's a good story. And then I told him the same story back to him in about 20 seconds without missing out any of the details. You know, that's what I do. I'm really good at summarizing things for people. A lot of the time, if I've got some of the elements in the equation to look at it. Whereas professors aren't, I mean, oh my God. I just had an incredible realization why professors talk the way that they do. And I'm not trying to, you know, point fingers at anybody or put people down who've got PhDs. But there is this tendency among some of the highly educated individuals of our society to draw things out a long, long time and take forever to explain it. And when they do explain it, it sounds really confusing and really convoluted. I know I'm not alone in this observation. I know other people see it too, and they hear it as well. And this is why it's somewhat difficult for people to grasp the ideas of the TPPA, because the only people who are capable of actually reading the documents and grasping the scumbaggery in the first place are people who are used to writing a 10,000-word thesis about a single idea. Right? You learn to repeat yourself. You learn to use way more words than are necessary to describe the same thing. That's the realization I just came to right now. Isn't that brilliant? You give somebody a prescription for a hell of a lot of words to describe something. And so, if you're intelligent, which most professors are, they wind up filling every sentence with as many words as they can to describe something in as much possible words as they possibly could muster. You know, now that's very good if you've got a 10,000 word limit, but a lot of people have a 30-second attention span. You know, so the people that are going to try and suss you out and inform you about the TPPA don't know how to communicate with you. They know how to communicate with other people of their own breed, their own ilk. You know, and I'm not saying that there's, you know, a difference between these people and other people who are not quite so highly educated in terms of being people. I'm just talking about purely communication, and that's just what I'm talking about here. No judgment of personality or people. You know, I know a lot of people who are just, you know, top cats. I can't understand what they're talking about. You know, oh really? Okay. You know, I'm not the only one who's done this. You know. Now, I've gone through to Jane Kelsey's article here, and it says critics of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, TPP, have been accused of misleading the public about the detail of this wide-ranging proposed treaty between New Zealand, the United States, and 10 other countries. That charge cannot go unanswered, nor can suggestions that the documentation must remain secret and the proposed rules do not threaten New Zealand's ability to regulate in the public interest. In the absence of publicly disclosed text, critics who closely monitor the negotiations, including myself, have been scrupulous about drawing on the best available information. This includes leaked texts, precedents from previous US agreements, and information gleaned from negotiators, although rarely from our own. For example, respected journalist Patrick Smelly, in his column Here's 10 Things Critics Do Not Want You to Grasp, February 14th, attacked the integrity of those critiques and made some factual errors in the process. As it is impossible to deal with all 10 points, I have focused on 3. See, again, an entire article to cover 3 points for 10 points a guy. See, these people need me to compress things down for them. All right, it's a team effort. You know, just be as concise as you possibly can, please. But it's not going to happen, is it? See, university professor, professor of law. 7 years to even get that degree in the first place, and then you got to do postgraduate study. Imagine how deep the rabbit hole of convoluted sentences goes. There's just no end to it. He says refusal to disclose negotiating documents is standard procedure and likens demands for their release to posting a country's best price on a trade me auction, yet the texts being sought are already known to the other negotiators. All right, it's only the negotiators who know. The World Trade Organization routinely issues draft texts, as Trade Minister Tim Grosser and Chief Negotiator David Walker know, because they have chaired the agriculture negotiations. There are many other precedents. Okay, see, here's the thing. Track records. In the absence of available information, track record is crucial. Is it a trade deal? Yes. How have every single trade deal been negotiated and done throughout history so far, and how did it work and such up to this present moment? What are all the precedents that have been set? You know, that's a pretty reasonable way to go about it when you don't have available documentation. You predict what's going to happen by what's gone before. Isn't that reasonable? You know? I thought it was. Smellie's claim that New Zealand's parliament will be involved in ratifying the TPP is misleading. At best, the treaty will be negotiated, signed, and ratified by the cabinet. All right? Stephen Joyce admitted this when correcting his previous claim that parliament would ratify the treaty. So it's just John Key and the ministers of the cabinet that get to do it. Now I know. And they're all paid off scumbags. Former CEOs, former bankers, massive farm holdings. I'm just thinking of all the cabinet ministers on my thing, and they're like shareholders of goodness knows how much stuff. Oh my God, how many pockets must they be in? They're going to ratify it. It'll be over quicker than the 40-year-old virgin. Like, it's just that simple. The parliamentary select committee process is cosmetic. And I've seen select committee hearings. I've seen a lot of things raised. And I've seen nothing amended. You know? That's why they call them submissions. Okay? See, the Spartans, they had a problem with submission. It was a bit of a problem for them. Now, all Parliament can do is refuse to pass any laws that are necessary to bring New Zealand into compliance with the agreement. Alright? So, if there's a certain amount of laws that we have to pass in order for that agreement to come through, then the best we can do is try to oppose the ruling national government, who have the ability to pass bills under urgency and deny them every bill that they want until such a time. Oh man, that just sounds like a downhill struggle, you know? It's going to be easy. Secondly, I, for one, have never said the TPP would mean the end of Pharmac. To suggest that this is the main threat sets up a straw man to knock down and diverts attention from the real threat, which is a process of white-anting Pharmac. Mr. Grosser said December that New Zealanders would not pay more for medicines, but he did not deny that the government would accept changes to patent laws that could put more of our health budget in the pharmaceutical companies' pockets. If user charges are not increased, that must mean either that Pharmac needs a bigger budget, or we get fewer subsidised medicines. This is pretty mathematical in the judgment of us, isn't it? It's definitely going to be in effect, one way or the other. Whether or not it destroys the entire thing, yeah, again, straw man. Likewise, Mr. Grosser admitted there would be some increased compliance cost for Pharmac. You know, so they even admit that it's going to threat. You feel that? I don't know if it's just me, but there's almost like this crick in my neck, kind of like when you hear BS and you see it refuted and you see how obvious the BS is. It kind of makes you a little bit sore. a little bit cranky. Oh, yeah. I'm kind of a little bit frustrated at this. However, that involves much more than processors. I understand the latest tech label by the US, Australia, and Japan would significantly increase the leverage of the drug companies over Pharmac's decision-making processes. Third, Smelly says the right of investors to sue the government in foreign arbitration is overblown and can already happen. True, New Zealand already has some investment treaties, but without big changes to the text that was leaked, the TPP will give litigious US investors new rights to demand compensation for lost profits when our government acts in the public interest. The recent upsurge of such disputes is causing other governments to rethink. The Australian Productivity Commission, in recent advice to the British government, said the risks were too high and costs outweighed benefits. Smelly suggests investors will not succeed in challenging our public health and environment laws, yet the majority of most investment disputes involve natural resources. New Zealand's got a lot of those. Ripe for the picking? Anyone? Anybody hear the apple fall from the tree? Others involve public health regulation, tobacco control policies, failure to proceed with health insurance privatizations, and the refusal of domestic courts to grant patents for medicines. All are based on similar provisions to the leaked TPP investment texts. It's high time TPP proponents brought facts to the public rather than attacking its widening range of critics. Jane Kelsey is a professor of law at the Auckland University. Her latest book is Hidden Agendas, What We Need to Know About the TPPA. And I would like it if people could, get that book. Or do anything. Do anything at all to stop the frickin' TPPA. I mean, is this not self-evident? Is action not called for? Is time not short? Is the situation not dangerous and dire and nearly too late? We have to act. We have to do something. And I'm so sorry I haven't finished my documentary. I've spent the 2 months really trying to recuperate. Because I did kind of like 6 months of like straight radio and like all the videoing and all the editing and everything. Just, whew, mate, it really got to me. And I actually desperately needed some time off. I've done about, I don't know, maybe 50 to 60 pages of script notes from the 7 interviews that I've done with Suzanne Posel, Kevin Barrett, Evelyn Gilbert, Penny Bright, Max Egan, and David Holden, who's a naturopath, and Neil Henderson from Climate Realist. But yeah, it's going to be good. All right, thank you very much for welcoming me back to the airwaves, ladies and gentlemen, and we will see you again sometime. Thank you very much for listening.